香歌莫就把
that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Thank you.
something you just can't miss. No matter what you think you're fighting for, to make rich those who profit from war. Look what they're doing to us people. Only they could lead the world to love and unity. Yeah. Hey, now I have seen where we will be and what's good for all of humanity. Not ruled by doctrines of supremacy or ideologies of bigotry. Some people live in their bubble. Now we will have to lead the world to love and unity. Yeah, we will have to lead right now, Lord. Cause them fake leaders in the place of power they sit, from religion to politics, riding a wave of fear, starting fires they don't care, making enemies out of friends, killing thousands, hundreds and tens. If only they could lead the world to peace and prosperity.
Fake leaders, Ziggy Marley, following in the footsteps of his great father, Bob Marley. Good afternoon, good evening, my sisters and brothers. Hotep to all of you. My name is William Rogers, and I am your host, and you are listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. on the timeforanawakening.com platform, which is a part of the BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. The Black Reality Think Tank is sponsored by Motherland Media Network, which also is a part of this system. And it is produced and directed by the Sankofa Historical Society. And we are so glad and honored to be here. We have a wonderful program lined up for you this evening. We're going to talk about one of my favorite people of all time, the great Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. And we're also going to talk about one of his mentees, a person that has followed in his footsteps, but has also transitioned to the ancestor world, my good friend and buddy and colleague, Dr. Ahmed Mbalia. We are going to talk about him. And so what we have here tonight is his organization. We have a wonderful brother that I've known back in his days as a student, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. But now he has maturated into manhood, into his own profession, and he is a part of an organization called Africans on the Move. Africans on the Move. And they are part of the Pan-African Socialist Revolutionary Party. And he's going to tell us a lot about that and who they are and what they're doing. But as we have promoted this program, that they are following the pattern and the plan of the great Marcus Garvey. And so we're here to talk about that in just a few minutes. Again, we thank all of you for joining us. As I said, we're here every Tuesday. We also have the Black Talk Radio, Black Reality Think Tank, also produces a program on Blog Talk Radio Network on Saturdays from 4 to 6 p.m. That's on the Blog Talk system on Saturdays from 4 to 6 p.m. We have a website on Facebook called the Black Reality Think Tank, And you can go to that page and you can get a listing of all of our broadcasts and upcoming broadcasts, as well as you can get the archive of those that have already appeared. You can listen to them at any point in time. You can also go to the webpage of www.timeforanawakening.com, and all of our programs are archived there as well. And so you are more than welcome to listen to them anytime, 24/7, and we appreciate it if you do. We are about energizing and engaging our community, using history and trying to raise the consciousness. And as the great Marcus Garvey said, up ye mighty race, you can accomplish what you will. And that is our mission here at the Black Reality Think Tank, is to help in that process so that we can make a better future for our children. The format for our program is a call-in format. You can, any of you who desire to call in and ask a question or make a comment or add your input to whatever we're talking about tonight, which is obviously Marcus Garvey, you can call area code 215-490-9832. I repeat, 215-490-9832. And you will enter our switchboard, and I will see you there. And you can, by all means, as I said, I will recognize your presence, and you will have an opportunity to either ask a question, to make a comment. One of the features of our program is to do an ancestral profile. We had followed the tradition and the words of the great Fannie Lou Hamer when she said, "We must always praise the bridges that brought us over." And so we believe in that here at the Black Reality Think Tank, and we do what we call an ancestral profile. And so today our ancestral profile is one of a mighty black woman from way back in time. We're going to go back a few, but a powerful, powerful sister. Her name was Solitude. Solitude. That was her name, S-O-L-I. T-U-D-E, Solitude. She was from the island of Guadalupe. And we want to talk about this great and powerful sister. She had a motto that said, "Live free or die. Live free or die." These were her last words when she was executed for her involvement in the 1802 rebellion in Guadalupe. Solitude was born in captivity in the plantations of Guadalupe in 1772. Solitude's father was a French sailor, and her mother was an African woman who was reportedly raped during a voyage on the slave ship coming to the Americas. Solitude was freed in the first abolition of 1794, but after Napoleon's decree, she became a Maroon and joined a group of freedom fighters that were led by men such as Louis Darius, Ignace, Palami, and Jacquot. They organized as a small army and fought against the French troops. On May the 10th, 1802, Delagrace launched a proclamation entitled "To the Whole Universe, the Last Cry of Innocence and Despair." Solitude, though a few months pregnant, joined this fight against Richie Pont's troops, which were the French soldiers. She was said to be a fierce and fearless warrior who pushed herself and her belly into the heart of the battles of a lot of the French regions there in Guadalupe. From victory to victory, and then eventually from setback to setback, she pushed herself and her womb all the way up into the mountains before the final defeat. After 18 days of combat, Richard Pence of the French army side overpowered the rebels, and Delagrace and his commands and comrades died in a very powerful explosion. Solitude got injured in that explosion, but she was captured and sentenced to death. But since the child in her womb was to become the property of her owner, she was temporarily pardoned, and her execution was rescheduled to the day after her birth. She gave birth on November 28, 1802. And in the morning of the following day, the greatest heroine of the Revolution, who was now 30 years old, stepped out of jail peacefully, while according to some of the written accounts, the milk from her breast slowly stained her nightshirt. She was then executed, and no one ever found the whereabouts of her child. Solitude has since been described as the symbol of Caribbean women who fought to protect the ideas of equality and freedom. There are many recognitions of Solitude. There's a statue of her in Guadalupe. Her name is still on the lips of many and now graces squares. There are avenues and streets named after her in Guadalupe. And according to the accounts, she has been featured in poems and in songs. There's a library named after her, and there is a museum room named after Solitude. And as I said, there's a statue honoring Solitude that was erected in 1999 in a small community in Guadalupe. Solitude. She said in her very brave account, live free or die. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to move on with our program today and have this wonderful discussion with my brother. With me is Mr. Terrence Tyler. Mr. Tyler is a middle school educator, and he has been a part of African on the Move for many, many years, as long as I've known him, back in the days in the University of Wisconsin, even when he was a student, he joined the movement. And his mentor and the founder, Dr. Ahmed Mbalia, heavily engaged Brother Terrence on the front lines of this and pushed him forward. They honor Garvey every year. I recall them having parades, celebrations, and they've got a Garvey Fest coming up this weekend. And I'm going to have him tell you about that and what they attempt to accomplish and kind of look a little bit at their goals and objectives. So my brothers and sisters, let me at this time welcome you and welcome him to our program, the Black Reality Think Tank. Good afternoon, Brother Tyler. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
Thank you. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on. I spoke with the widow of Dr. Mbalia several months back, just to, first of all, check on her to see how she was doing. And I told her that I wanted to look at the possibility of doing this, and obviously you were the man to do the work. You were the man. So why don't you start off, Brother Tyler, and tell us, first of all, what is Africans on the Move? Give us a little history of that, and what does that really mean? What is that you're trying to do?
All right. So Africans on the Move, better known as AOM, we are a community-based organization established here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Our purpose is to produce programs and information that increases the consciousness of the community and those of primary African origin, you know, in particular.
Okay.
Also, we would like to educate people on the general richness and history and culture of African people.
Okay.
So Africans on the Move is really just we seek to engage, dialogue, organize, and educate, mobilize people around history.
Okay. All right. Now tie that in to me for the Pan-African Socialist Revolutionary Party. I know that is a part of that. Tie that in for me.
The Pan-African Revolutionary Socialist Party, yes. Now, that is the revolutionary organization of Africans on the Move.
Okay.
So Africans on the Move is a community-based organization, nonprofit, et cetera. The PRSP is a revolutionary organization committed to bringing about Pan-Africanism, which is what our brother Marcus Garvey and also the sisters Amy Dashwood and Amy Jock talked about. So Pan-Africanism, for those who are unaware, is the total liberation and unification of Africa under a scientific socialist government.
Right.
So we, the PRSP, is convinced that the only permanent solution to our problems that our people face is Pan-Africanism.
Gotcha. So it's an umbrella to sort of bring people back into that focus, and to sort of galvanize, as you said, the community. First of all, teaching them what it is first, and then see and let them see how it can impact them. What would you say? Now, how long have you been in existence? When did the organization start? I mean, I think it started before you came around, before you started school.
Yeah, it started before me. I was born, but it started before me. Now, PRST started in 1983.
Okay.
It was founded by the different militants who broke off from the AARP.
Okay.
Now, Africans on the Move was founded in 1987.
Okay.
In Milwaukee.
Right. Okay. Now the Pan-African group, was that out of Milwaukee too, or is that from somewhere else? I know you all had a connection with.
Well, we good question. We got members of across the country and the world, for that matter, because I and a couple other party members just came back from Africa in June.
Okay.
And while we were there, we met and politicized, held political education circles with some members in Ghana. So we do have members in Ghana, Virginia. We got some in Ohio, D.C., Illinois, Chicago. So we're still small, but we do have members, active members.
Okay.
That's moving along.
Now, I know you also, even though a lot of the philosophy and the activity of particularly African on the Moves embraces obviously the teachings and the philosophy of Marcus Garvey, but also you have a strong connection to Kwame Nkrumah philosophy and teachings as well. Correct?
Yes. So we call ourselves Nkrumah.
Okay.
After Osagyefu, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, and his impact.
Okay.
And when you study Kwame Nkrumah, you see where the baton, the proverbial baton from Garvey to Nkrumah was realized.
Exactly.
I mean, we had Garvey who was putting together programs and connecting people to Africa, and though Marcus Garvey never stepped foot into Africa.
Okay.
But Kwame Nkrumah took that Pan-African mantle and established obviously, Ghana being the first liberated country from their colonial colonizers in Africa, the Black Star itself that's on the Ghana flag is homage to the Garveys.
Right.
And there's other, you know, I've been reading where the 9 or 10 African countries that have the red, black, and green, or red, gold, and green, any connection like that was inspired by Garvey and the African liberation flag.
Exactly. And, you know, what's always been so very interesting and very clearly Nkrumah's philosophies and teachings, you know, embraced a lot of Garvey's principles. And, and at the same time, however, when Du Bois jumped into the picture, he went straight to Nkrumah, and I wonder if he ever gave Garvey credit. Because
exactly.
he had a conflict.
Because I've never read it. I never read it, but it's a shame when we look back into our history to see how they bickered, you know.
Right.
Not even over just philosophy, but they would personal attacks on the skin color, things of that nature. But exactly, because Boy went on to embrace Pan-Africanism.
Right, he sure did. Yeah.
So far that he left the country.
Left the country.
And now citizenship and went to Accra.
Right.
And while I was there, I visited his house, which they turned into a museum out there.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, at the same time, you know, they had that difference. That goes on to show you that sometimes we have to, you know, in our own activities and planning, we have a tendency to have these ideological conflicts, and that really stops us. But sometimes it comes full circle, and, you know, it hits us in the butt. And so it definitely hit him. He had to end up, he died a Garveyite in a certain way. Yep. Yeah, he was a Garveyite when he died. okay, let me ask you.
When you get that history, it's because it's because, you know, Garvey came, or he was coming to the U.S. to see Booker.
Right.
Who was,
that's right.
At odds with the boy. So it was something else.
Yeah,
and,
it was a sister that called us.
Washington.
Uh-huh. There was a sister that called us last week on last week's program, and she asked about that, the fact that Garvey came to America to meet Booker T. Washington. And, he came to see him. So, you know, we did indicate that to her, that she did. And I think one of the things that I found in my work and in my historical research is that you have to look at their letters in terms of, you have to go to their letters, and their letters sometimes tell a different story. Like, like, for instance, you know, Booker T. Washington and Du Bois, we always been told that they had a conflict. Well, that may be, but they also were working together on a lot of underground projects that they were not public with.
They did a book.
That's right. They sure did. Yeah. So that's the kind of a thing. Now, you, which of the organizations used to publish the newspaper called the Nkrumahs? Who was that?
Can you repeat it?
The newspaper, the Nkrumahs.
Yeah,
who was that? Which one of the organizations were publishing? Was that Africa's on the Move or the PANDA?
PRSP, Pan-African Revolutionary Socialist Party, published the Nkrumahs.
Okay, was that did they publish it out of Milwaukee or Chicago?
Say it again.
Did they publish it out of Milwaukee or Chicago?
It was published out of Chicago, but the writers were some of us here in Milwaukee, some of them in Chicago.
Right.
So some of our party members in Chicago wrote, and we wrote up here. But, yeah, we you looked at the address and whatnot, it was published out of Chicago.
Right. I met Brother Ahmed back during that time. I came to Milwaukee in 1983, and I met him early then, even before I started teaching at the University of Wisconsin. I met him in a lot of rallies. He used to be he would have vendor tables. And he would be passing out copies of the Nkrumah, and he would be passing out other material. And I remember stopping and talking to him a little bit about some things. And he even used to sell African artifacts. And as a matter of fact, I still have an African mask this day I bought from him at the African Art Festival down at the PAC. So I engaged with him very early in that time. And then obviously when I joined the staff at UWM, him being right there, he and I used to teach a lot of the similar courses. And I think, didn't you have a class with me?
Yeah, I had Black Church and Religion?
Right, that's right, you sure did. That's right, yeah, I remember that. I knew you were in the class.
That was one of my only 100 papers, so I still got it.
All right, I love it. You were a powerful brother, great student. I remember you too. Remember you very well. Let me ask you a little bit about the the whole Nkrumah's idea, the paper. And the reason I'm asking about the Nkrumah's because I loved it. I mean, it was a powerful organ. It spoke to a lot of the Garvey ideas and principles. A lot of the quotes used to be laden. The paper was laden with a lot of Garvey quotes in it. What was the idea of that organ? What was it looking to do? Was it to gather membership or attempt to try to push the philosophy? What was it? What was it designed? What was it being published to do?
Excellent question. We got a couple points. When we say Nkrumahs, when we are Nkrumahs, we are talking about Nkrumahism, which is an ideology after Kwame Nkrumah.
Okay.
And Nkrumahism provides us with principles that we use to connect channels and our actions and thoughts in an organized manner.
Right.
So what we were doing with the newspaper and being Nkrumahs, one of the first principles of Nkrumahism is that all people of African descent, no matter where they live, are African.
That's a direct
connection to Marcus Garvey in the Garden.
Right.
Another principle is that Nkrumahism embraces traditional African principles of egalitarianism, humanism, and collectivism.
Okay.
And Kumaism uses dialectical historical materialism as its method of analysis.
Mm-hmm.
It uses positive action as its theory of action. So, you know, Ghana got its liberation not through revolutionary warfare like Angola. They got theirs through positive action,
right,
which was a principle of Kwame Nkrumah.
Okay, okay, excellent.
Theory of Nkrumah.
Right, powerful. Now, Nkrumah also had a concept called consciousism.
Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about that? What is consciousism?
Now, that's a tough one. That's one of the toughest books
I know.
That I've read and continue to go back to read.
Right.
So, but from my basic understanding, conscientism is a philosophy.
Okay.
It is a philosophy that Kwame Nkrumah put. It's more like a theoretical philosophy to how we attain our liberation.
Right, right.
So exactly. It's a theory, it's an action component to it.
Okay. And has anybody, to your knowledge, used that?
Conscientism can be called Nkrumahism.
Okay, right, right. Yeah, and I remember Dr. Mbalia used to talk about that a lot. I know he taught that in his classes. You know, he taught that theory, required his students to try to understand some of that in terms of, you know, structuring a liberation movement and change. So now Africans on the move, what parts of Garveyism are you using now, right now, and what part of Nkrumah's ideology are you using right now as you are fighting for the things that you are trying to do?
All right. So once again, they're very similar, especially in the Pan-African ideology.
Okay. Right.
The fact that we won't be free until Africa is unified and liberated under African socialist scientific socialist government.
Okay.
That's an idea that Nkrumah and Garvey have in common. So what we do here at AOM is that we seek to try to organize the people,
right,
and educate the people on our history,
right,
on the rich culture and history of African people,
right,
and hope there, you know, you become more involved in what's going on in the community. And we do that, well, one of the ways we do that is we produce a calendar, an annual calendar. This year's calendar theme is called The Eternal Enemy, African People's Struggle Against Our Own Weaknesses.
Okay.
So we understand capitalism and its tentacles is the primary and principal enemy of African people. But this year's calendar, we wanted to look at some of those eternal struggles that we go through and how to rectify those, such as the Uncle Tom leadership, the neocolonial puppets in Africa, the culture hustlers, you know. Mm-hmm. So those things are the things we tackle in our annual calendar.
Mm-hmm.
We also do a school every year. So the third week of September in Milwaukee, we start our Watoto Yuhuru Shule, which is Children Freedom School in Swahili.
Mm.
And we seek to educate our youth 3 to 18 years old in African history.
All right.
Yeah. And recently we just, this past year, we've been doing a podcast. So we 7 podcasts deep now.
Okay.
We do one once a month. And you can find our podcast on SoundCloud. You can find it in iTunes, or you can look on our website.
Okay.
For those who are listening, our website is www.prsponline.org.
Excellent.
www.prsponline.org.
Okay.
And you can see our information on the website. You can get links to our podcast, and the school.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Yeah, because I know that you all have been doing that for a while. You've been doing that teaching part. Matter of fact, one of my philosophies now, my own personal thing, is that more people need to start what I call Saturday schools, where we have these private meeting areas where we bring students and we teach just what you all are doing in a private setting.
Mm-hmm.
And here's an example, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted you on today, because you all are doing that, and you've been doing it for a while, and it has been very, very successful, that I know, more than the years that I was there in Wisconsin. So I'm extremely proud that you're still continuing that. And I know that calendar. I remember the calendar being a yep. crucial piece of that. And so you were doing that Garvey spirit, because, you know, Garvey was a master organizer. We all know that.
Oh, yeah.
He was a master organizer.
The largest, he along with Amy and Ashwood and Amy Jock, produced the largest organization of African people ever assembled.
That's right.
With no social media.
That's
no
right.
telephone.
That's right. Right. No Twitter.
Just radio and publication.
No Facebook. None of that. Yeah, you're right. That's exactly right. Let me ask you this. I want to talk a little bit. I'm going to hone in on some of the tactics that Garvey used, and just to kind of ask you to explain from your perspective on the impact of them and the purpose behind them. Last week's program, I promoted the program by putting a picture of those brothers, 800 brothers that marched down the street in Memphis, Tennessee. In protest over crime and some of the things that were going on in Memphis. And they were very powerful presence. And it said a lot. And it kind of reminded me of Garvey's Saturday parades, as well as when Malcolm at that time grabbed those brothers from the nation and went down to that police precinct in New York. To protest them holding that brother and not giving him medical treatment. But I got a lot of flack back from some people saying, this ain't nothing. What is that going to do? I responded very peacefully and saying, but everything has to be tried. You have to do things, as a psychology to revolution. And you have to you're trying to change people's minds. So let me ask you, what was the purpose behind, from your reading and your teaching from Dr. Mbalia, of Garvey's usage of those parades on Saturday, and then well as him dressing up in an admiral's kind of like uniform doing some of that? What was the logic behind that and when he did that in Harlem? Talk a little bit about that.
Well, the parade is – And African people have been parading since the beginning of time. We celebrate. We celebrate births. We celebrate marriages. We even celebrate transitions.
Right.
So
right.
A parade, from what I've read about Marcus Garvey, was a way not only to recruit more members of the UNIA, but it was just to show the power in numbers and the strength of these African people, led by that. The Black Cross nurses would be marching in their white suits.
Right.
The Black Legionnaires would be marching down the street. So that's just a good look. If you in a community in Atlanta or Milwaukee and you see folk parading down the street, it's going to be a good look. It brings attention to people.
That's right. That's
and
right.
It makes people look at that. So I think that the use of the parade was very powerful. And the gear, when he wore his regal gear, it was to show, the king, the leadership. When he wore his scholarly gear, it was to show that the importance of education.
Right, exactly.
And how
exactly.
African people needed to be educated.
Yeah, and see, that's the power of that mind thing. You gotta hit people's minds. And he was a master at that too, and I love it.
Oh yeah,
I love what he did. I think we haven't seen anything like that before. Nothing.
Nope.
Has occurred in that way. And militaries do it. They marched down the street. The Russians walked down the street with all their missiles and all their tanks. The North Koreans had parades. Even that madman in the White House. He said he wants to try. And then,
it's absolutely a show of strength.
Right, exactly.
And you're
right. You're right about that. So that is a very powerful piece. Those Saturday parades were, I understand from my readings and information, they were powerful times and moments, and they did galvanize the people of Harlem to that. Okay, let's take a step forward and jump in time right now. We're talking 1930s, 2s, 33s. What do you think? Well, first of all, before I do the big jump, what do you think happened to the Garvey movement? Why didn't it? How did he get bamboozled and tricked into some of the things we do? And I think some of that's obvious, but I just want to hear you explain it since you were a part of the movement. What happened?
Unfortunately, this is, when I said the calendar was about Uncle Tom leadership, you can look back at the end of or the downfall of the UNIA and look directly at some Uncle Tom leaders who were present at that time who were in O'Garvey's downfall, who worked in cahoots with J. Edgar Hoover and the government, with the Trump in charge of the mail fraud. So that was, the legality. That was the part they tagged him on, the mail fraud. But you definitely had members like Cyrus Briggs, A. Philip Randolph, W.E.B. Du Bois. All of them were in there in that realm conspiring against the UNIA and Garvey's movement.
Yeah. And why? Why do you think they were conspiring? Why didn't they? Why couldn't they see the bigger picture of that movie?
Wow. The voice came out of the.
And I know that's your. That, it would be just an opinion, but I'm just wondering if you ever thought about how you looked at that.
I guess it's the same thing as of today. History showed it from Aquaman and more. Connecting a little bit, or obviously moving toward each other for their assassinations. But I don't know. It looks like the system is the powerful tool, and it loves pitting Africans against Africans.
Right.
And exactly. We have not yet, this is something that came out of slavery. We have not yet been able to see that, we're being pitted against each other. And we can have different viewpoints and still work toward a common goal.
Right, exactly. That's why I opened up the program today with that piece by Ziggy Marley, See Them Fake Leaders. And I love that song. Matter of fact, that whole album that Ziggy did is speaking to a lot of that. But you're right. I know that. I just wanted to hear you say it for our audience purposes, because that's the question everybody asked. Well, why didn't it work? If it was so good, what happened? Well, what happens in most cases, you got, like you said, you got sellouts. Yeah. Now, listen, one of the sisters called me last week on the program, and she said that somewhere she heard, I think she said she heard it with Dick Gregory had said it, that Queen Mother Moore was against Garvey and was a part of that group. Did you ever heard that?
Nah, that's new to me, because I know she was part of the Republic of New Africa?
I know, that's what I'm saying. That's why it's kind of hard, it's kind of shocking. That she might have been. I've got a brother that is.
Isn't she later, too?
This sister said that Dick Gregory.
I studied on Queen Mother Moore, but I think she was a little bit later than Garvey.
Right. Well, this sister called and said that Dick Gregory, she heard Dick Gregory say that. We have a person, a colleague that has been a frequent guest on the Black Reality Think Tank. He wrote a book called Recapturing the African Mind. He's done a lot of research on that colonial period. I want to ask him.
That book.
Oh, you have that book?
That's Bruce Bridges, right?
Right, Brother Bruce, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
He normally is on our program. I don't know. He hasn't called in a long time. I haven't heard from him in a while. He definitely knows some of that piece. He might know that history. I think she may even be calling in now. I think that's her on the phone now. I'm gonna bring her on in a few minutes and maybe have her ask her. So maybe she might have found out some research on whether or not Queen Mother Moore may have been a part of that anti-Garvey group. It's just hard for me to see that because, you know, she was pushing reparations and, like you said, the Republic of New Africa, and she was a younger woman at the time. So I don't know. It would be interesting to know that. Okay, I want to jump ship a minute and go to the contemporary time and talk about what your challenges are in bringing the Garvey idea into the community. Now, I recall when you all used to do the Garvey Day Fest right on the corner of 27th and Center at the museum, at the Wisconsin Black Historical Museum, Brother Claiborne. And that was always a great, and it's unique there because that is the heart of the hood. I remember people would walk by and watch the parade and do some things. And a lot of the time, these were the people that you were trying to reach. These were the people that you were trying to get mentally to understand some of this. What has been your success or what has been your challenges in trying to reach grassroots families and pushing the Garvey idea?
It's the same thing. It's always going to be a challenge in this capitalist system when the people are being bombarded with problem after problem.
You know, Brother Terrence,
yeah.
Your mic is fading out. It sounds like you're moving. It's moving around. And it's going in and out. Maybe if you could just kind of put it a little bit closer to you, because it does. I can hear you, but it does drip. It keeps dripping.
Okay.
All right. I'm sorry. Go right ahead. Continue.
Okay. So yeah, I was saying when the masses are bombarded with you know, trying to get the basic necessities of food, clothing, shelter,
right.
Trying to get a quality job, health care. I mean, those type of problems make it hard and difficult for people to want to seek organization. It makes it harder to mobilize the mass.
Right.
So, you know, every year we have difficulty in bringing people out and trying to get people together, but you know, it's a effort, it's an action that we must continue to do.
Okay, but you still got to do it. And I think one of the things I like that you all did is that you started going into the schools and working with the schools. So therefore you catch them before they get out there on the street. So by the time they get out there on the street, they recognize who you are. And sometimes they can come over and do that. And I think that's one of the ways. What about adults? What about the brothers and sisters, that millennium group today and the post millenniums? What about that group? How is that? How is it able to reach them?
That's just as difficult. I mean, it seems like as positive as social media is, it can also be a negative tool if not done correctly. And it seems like a lot of adults spend so much time on it. Looking at tribute things, like one of the calendar pieces is we talk about is hating.
Right.
And if you ever just go online, you know, a hip hop site or a news media site and just scroll the comments and just see how many people will comment on something so negatively or the gifts and the memes that people produce that are just downright, you know, just negative and terrible. It seems like it's just so much energy is being spent on negativity and internal weaknesses as opposed to coming together and organize.
Right. Okay. Because, you know, I think that hones right into the whole energy of all of our work out here in the community and those of us that are fighting for liberation and change and as Brother Bruce Bridges said, recapturing the African mind and how do you do that. I think we'll be celebrating Garvey's birthday 131 years. I think it'd be 131 years old. And he his cry to of up, you mighty race, you can accomplish what you will, was a wake-up thing that he was sending out to the masses of black people. And as I think about that today, we still got to say that. We still got to use that cry. And I'm wondering, how do you ever move beyond telling folks to wake up? Up, you mighty race. When are we going to finally realize that you are mighty people? You know, and I think that's the question I asked you in terms of creating a curriculum or a teaching format. How are we going to move that agenda up, of up you mighty race? How are you going to move people up?
Yeah, well, it starts with education.
Okay.
And not just, you know, being educated by your enemy in the capitalist system, where you just being educated to go work for somebody and for a minimum wage that really does, you know, that makes you work hard to make ends meet.
Right.
We're talking about political education. We're talking about education that can be used for liberation. And that's what we do at Watoto Yuhuru Shule. We teach the kids about their African principles.
Right.
African history prior to the European slave trade.
Right.
So
leaders
who rose out of that situation. So with any form of liberation, you're going to take education. Somehow you got to continue to educate the masses.
Right.
And we can't underestimate this enemy called capitalism. You see that today. It's just, I mean, you got some of, what is it? I was about to say Steve Harvey, Jim Brown. You know, Jim Brown was one of the leaders who stood next to Muhammad Ali in the 60s.
That's right.
And now he's a staunch Trump supporter and was telling Kaepernick to stand and things. I mean, it's a shame how people can go backwards if they don't continue to move forward.
Right.
And educate themselves. So it's always going to start with education. Then you got to mobilize the people. We got to get the people to move.
Right, exactly.
And once they move, we can get them organized.
Yeah, and you know, I'm always
that's a day fight. And I don't know Marcus Garvey's quote per se, but one of the ones I look at a lot is that he said, you know, you're not going to see African redemption right now.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you don't continue to work for it.
There we go. I like
and,
that.
And
that's
exactly
it. Right.
You want to do this for your kids, grandkids, etc.
Right. And I think one of the things that we, as you said, you know, a lot of the Garvey philosophy, as well as the Nkrumah philosophy of, you know, some of the things, the consciousism philosophy of his and the Nkrumahism philosophy and understanding that we are African first. And I think we've got to understand that in a way that even if the people who are African don't understand it, we have to understand that they are, you know. And get them to see that. We can't abandon them. That's our problem. Our problem is sometimes that, you know, we got brothers and sisters out here that are challenged, who are kind of blind, who haven't woken up. And so we dish them aside. And I don't...
That reminds me of Kwame Ture's quote. You know, it says the only difference between the African on the continent and the African here is that we were snatched from the continent and the Africans got the continent snatched from them.
Right. That's right.
We're the same people.
Same people.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to tell you an interesting scenario that plays into a lot of this, and I don't necessarily want to talk about it today on our program, but I'm watching this Omarosa situation with the Trump White House. But there's some stuff in there that is needs to be talked about at some point. This man called this black woman a dog. Now, if he would have called,
be yanked out the White House.
If he would have called a Jewish woman or an Italian woman, you know, even regardless of what the situation was, a dog, I don't think that community would have taken that.
Exactly. I mean, he didn't even call Stormy Daniels a dog.
Right, the prostitute. He didn't call her a slut. He didn't call her low-life.
Nothing.
Yeah.
My thing is, and I'd like to say, we we save this conversation for another one, but I think that was his third revision.
Right.
I think the first word was the N word, second word was the B word. I think he finally said, I need something brutal but safe in my eyes.
Exactly right.
And he settled on dog.
Right. He settled on dog. A dog.
You know what he wanted to call him.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly right. And I'm watching us respond to that. And most of the response that I've seen on social media, well, that's good for her. She had no business being up there, no way. Blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. You know. And I really don't think that's the response that our African community needs to look at. She's being checked. She's well aware that she has made a huge mistake. But to allow our community to allow that from a man that is supposed to be in the leadership over all people get away with it, I don't know. So like I said, I don't want to talk about that, but I want to deal with Garvey. You know what? I've got some folks on the line. I've got the sister I told you that called me last week about the she's on. Hopefully, I'm going to bring her on, see if she has some questions. We got a couple other folk on there online that I know have some questions. And then we're going to come back, and when I come back, I want to talk to you about a little bit more about some of Garvey's philosophy. I want to talk about that black church that Garvey started and kind of look at the philosophy of what that was all about. Okay, caller on 586-202. Good afternoon, sister. How you doing?
Good afternoon, Dr. Rogers. Thank you for taking my call, sir.
Yes, sir.
It's my pleasure. Yes, you know, I did have a couple of questions, if you didn't mind. And yes, I think, was it last week? I did call and inquire whether or not you knew anything about Queen Mother Audley Moore betraying Marcus Garvey.
Right.
And since that time, I've discovered Dick Gregory talked about that, as I said, on the Carl Nelson show. And the date of that show was August 17, 2016.
I'm going to
check that. It's out there on YouTube. Somebody recorded it and put it out there. Now, I haven't listened to it again yet,
okay.
But I wanted to zero in so I could be more specific. Unfortunately, Baba Dick is not around anymore to ask him.
Right.
So, and that's one reason why I was asking you all. You know, not that it's going to, I don't know what good that information will do. It may have some constructive results. It may not.
And I think it may.
But nonetheless, tonight, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was saying, I think it would have some. I think it may be. Yeah, from my opinion. I think so. But anyway, go right ahead.
Okay.
Go right ahead, question.
Okay. Your guest tonight, I wanted to ask if he could repeat the name of his website slowly. Because I didn't get it.
Sorry about that. It's www.prst. Pan-African Revolutionary Socialist Party.
I'm sorry. P-R-S-T? Yeah.
P as in Pan-African. R
oh,
as
P.
in Revolutionary. Yep. S as in Socialist. P as in Party. So www.prstonline.org.
Okay. One word. PRSPonline.org.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And the other question I had, what was the name of the book that Booker T. Washington and W.B. Du Bois wrote together? What was the name of that book, if I understood you?
You know what? I'm looking at – I grabbed the Bruce Bridges book when Dr. Rogers was talking about it, and then when he mentioned Garvey's philosophy, I grabbed another book. So if you give me a few minutes, I could definitely find that title because I've read it because I teach the students on that chapter that they came together and did a book.
Right.
So I had to find that title.
Okay. Well, maybe before the show's out. The other question is it true that the very first black FBI agent, or it was called the Bureau of Investigation back in 1919, was hired to infiltrate the UNIA, the Universal Negro Improvement Association, founded by the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey? Do you know offhand, is it true that that first black or Negro African-American FBI agent, of course it wasn't called the FBI back then, I understand, was hired to infiltrate Garvey's organization?
Yeah.
I've read that. I can't think of the brother's name, but yeah, because Hoover had got his start out with, you know, infiltrating and destroying the UNIA. That was his first strike, per se. So I think they did get a brother to join in and help infiltrate the organization.
And if I can add to that, that's a great question because it really talks about that whole New York scene at that time. He actually was brought in first to go after Noble Drew Ali.
Oh.
And then once the Noble Drew Ali connection was made, then they recognized that all of that group, there were a group that was formulating, you know, around those ideas, that they would then look at the Garvey movement too. But originally he was brought in, and a funny thing, and it's really had never been recorded as an employee, but he was brought in to look at Noble Drew Ali.
Okay. One last question. I know you have other callers, but to your guests, I read somewhere where Marcus Garvey's father used to have his wife and his children address him as Mr. Garvey. I believe I was reading something where Amy Jacques Garvey was speaking to that effect. Do you know anything about that? And if so, why would a father adopt that kind of position? This was in Jamaica where he insisted that his wife address him as Mr. Garvey and that his children address him as Mr. Garvey.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one.
Oh, all right then.
Yeah.
All right.
I understand the father was formal. He was very formal, and he had a lot of Eurocentric practices as well, to a certain extent. The father.
I think maybe that
might explain some of it. I don't know exactly specifically why, but I have heard in reading the writings about the father is that he was very strict disciplinarian, and he was also very Eurocentric in terms of, you know, some of his philosophy and ideology. And, you know, and as one of our callers has said, it was a patriarchal system. You know, it was really very patriarchal among that group. Uh-huh. But that's a good question.
Very yeah,
good.
So again, Okay, well, that's all I had tonight, Doctor. I appreciate you taking my call,
and I'll
wait to hear the title of that book when you find it there.
I found it. You hear me?
You're
breaking
it?
Up. What did you say, sir?
I said I found it. It's called The Negro in America. They co-wrote it in 1900.
The Negro in America.
Says in 1900, more than a decade before Washington's death, the boy in Washington co-authored the book The Negro in America.
Okay. The Negro in America. Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you for calling.
Yes, you're welcome.
Stay with us. Make
sure
to stay with us. Yes. Okay. All right.
Yes, sir.
Brother Herbie White, how you doing, my brother? How you doing today?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Dr. Rogers?
Good. Where's our buddy? He's lost in, he's MIA, missing in action. I haven't talked to him in a while.
I was over to Bruce's house today. He said when he comes back from the class that he teaches in Bunn on Highway 98, he said he tries to get the show, but it breaks up on his cell phone, but he was going to try to get in on it tonight.
Because I want to ask him about that Queen Mother Moore thing. I'm sure he might know something about that. And our guest today also knows about him and has his book. So I wanted him to call in and talk about that. So what are your thoughts, Marcus Garvey?
Well, other than to say that he was one of the greatest people that the race produced and whatnot, and I basically concur with everything that the brother's been talking about. That the challenge is getting the message to the young people.
That's the deal.
It's getting the message to the young people. You certainly can't do it in public schools.
Right.
That's not going to happen.
No, you're right. You're right.
And so for us to get the message out to provide opportunities for young people to learn and to hear about the things that they need to hear about, that's the challenge. And part of that challenge is that a lot of those parents don't want them to hear it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a little too radical for them. If anytime black people talk about Africa for Africans and blacks for blacks, and you don't include white people in the conversation, a lot of black people get nervous.
Right.
Unfortunately. So that's, you know, with all the social media and all the other distractions and other stuff going on, the issue is getting the message to the young people.
To the young people. And that's my argument for Saturday schools. That's why we got to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just as proof, as a middle school social studies teacher, I know it's difficult. We were teaching world history one day, and in particular Islam, and little girls really don't pay attention in class. She kind of doze off and whatnot. The next day, she comes in with a letter saying her mother wants me to call her. I call the mother, what's up? And the mother's like, why are you teaching Islam to my kid in class?
Mm.
I'm like, well, it's no study. This is history. And in the 700s, Africans brought Islam and into Spain and civilized. You know, I had to go into this whole gambit with our own people. And the parent not understanding, well, this is a religion that's part of history. As any other religion. I'm not teaching religion in class. I'm teaching history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's played a role in history. So yeah, I echo your sentiments on the difficulty of teaching it definitely in public schools. That's why I also teach outside school in the Wato Uhuru Shoelace School.
One of the problems is before you can teach African history and African culture, you got to get European history and European culture out of people.
Oh, yeah.
Because the same two things can't occupy the same space at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Especially the way it's distorted.
So if you haven't gotten those European concepts, that capitalism and all that rest of the stuff out of people, they're not going to hear nothing you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Deprogramming, that's what it is. It really is. Okay, thank you, Brother White. I appreciate it, as well always. I hope Bruce will give us a call so I can ask him that question about the Queen Mother Moore. Brother Marcus, how you doing today?
Yes, Dr. Rogers. Good evening.
Great. Good evening to you, my brother.
All right, and good evening to the guest.
Marcus.
Good evening. You hear me? Can you
yes,
hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes, uh-huh. Yes. Okay, great. You know, Du Bois only embraced Garveyism after he was indicted by the federal government. We must remember that. Don't forget that. You see, it was at the end of Du Bois' life when the U.S. government indicted Du Bois. Then he ran to Ghana.
Right.
Then he embraced Garveyism. You see, he said Garvey was right. You see, but after he was fighting Garvey and being a flunky, but in the end, he said, you know, Garvey was right. When he had to leave, he had to flee. Also, we got to remember the Jewish involvement in Garvey's demise. It was a Jewish judge Julian Mack, who was a member of the NAACP and a Zionist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And a Jewish prosecutor that sent Garvey to prison. In fact, the prosecutor, he said to the judge, he said, Judge, are you going to let the tiger go? when he in the trial, he said to the judge, he said, "Are you gonna let the tiger go?" In reference to Garvey, and Garvey said yes. He said, "Well, yeah." He said, "You may have caged the tiger, but what about the cubs I have running around? You see? So we are the cubs of Garvey in this time." Now, another thing we must take in mind is that, and this is from Garvey's philosophy and opinion, own words now.
Okay.
Garvey wasn't a communist. See, Garvey never embraced communism. He said he was, and he was not capitalist to the extent either, but he said you could use capitalism, but he had to be capped off. He said you have to use capitalism, but you have to cap it off. Read his book.
Right.
Garvey, the philosophy and opinions of Garvey by that was edited by Tony Martin Press,
right,
and Majority Press, and in Race First by Dr. Tony Martin.
Mm-hmm.
So you know he was against unbridled capitalism, but he said he wasn't, you know, saying, well, you know, for the social, he should share everything with the lobster. He said no, everybody should work and contribute. But I say, whatever economic system we come up with in Africa, we have to make sure that every black woman, man, woman, and child is fed, is clothed, is housed, has medical attention, mm-hmm. and definitely has some protection. Now, inspiration, you talk about inspiring people. And I think one of the best inspiration for us to show our people is that we ourselves have to be successful. You see, we as nationalists have to use Pan-Africanism to demonstrate success in our lives.
That's true.
Because most our young people, they go by inspiration. You know, they're going to say to you, "Well, you're talking about that black stuff, but what are you doing in your life? What you got going for you?"
Exactly.
You see, you're talking about that, yeah. But, you know, if we use Pan-Africanism as an economic tool to uplift ourselves in our lives, you see, then we can say, well, look, brother, look, sister, you know, hey, I could show you how to do this, you know, I could show you how to do that. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to do it better than you. Because, you see, what's happening, you know, that jealousy in our people, we let them shine. They're going to say, "I'm going to show Dr. Rogers. I'm going to show him that I could do it better than him." Which is what you want them to do anyway. You want us to move up. You see, so we have to be an example in our lives, you know, to show our people. Right. And lastly, we know that this week is Garvey's birthday is Friday. Right. Muta Baruka out of Jamaica, they're going to have a whole day program on Sunday, the 19th, and you can view it on YouTube through IRFM, live stream it. It's a whole day program from 6 o'clock straight through the night. It's going to be, Garvey is on the rise. We are on the rise.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so.
Up you mighty race. Up you mighty race. That's right. Exactly.
We're going to win. We're going to win this struggle.
I
continue listening. Thank you so much, Dr.
Thank Ryan. You, Brother Marcus, for calling. Thank you so much. Yeah. Brother Timothy, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. How are you doing, my dear brother? How you feel today?
Brother, all is well. You have another home run hitter. And all your guests that you bring on bring me so much information. But I'm going to have to throw some information out here, sir. The name of that book that Du Bois and Booker T. Washington co-authored together is called The Negro in the South.
Okay.
Okay. To the best of my knowledge, that's the book I have. Maybe there's another book that he may have done. It's called The Negro in the South. But I'm going to talk about
the Negro in the
General,
South?
The provisional president of Africa to one is provided that I'm a graduate of Lincoln University, the class of 83, and the quote that Nkrumah talks about is on our shirts. And we are proud that a man like Nkrumah and Nnamdi Azikiwe came from out of Lincoln University to go back to their countries and be presiding officers and presidents. But one thing I did learn about Nkrumah is he went from Lincoln University and got various degrees, and I think he got his PhD. One of his graduate degrees was from New York, I think Columbia. And I do believe in his observation of Marcus Garvey. In his mind, he said when he went back to his own country, by being influenced by Marcus Garvey, that Africa must unite. So mm-hmm. I'll have to say that when it comes to Philadelphia, sir, I want you to know, if you ever visit Philadelphia, we still have the UNIA building approximately on 17th and Cecil B. Moore Avenue that's still intact. Mm-hmm. We just recently, I think it was last weekend, Dr. Rogers, I told Dr. Rogers that we had a parade at 52nd and Market Street in West Philadelphia. We marched in that parade, that Marcus Garvey parade, from 52nd and Market to 52nd and Pine Street, which was once called Black Oak Park, which is now called Malcolm X Park. And we had a festival, a parade, a drill team, a float that was out of this world. Right. And that spirit in Philadelphia is still strong when it comes to Marcus Garvey. Remember now, Philadelphia is an Islamic town. You have a lot of Muslims, the Nation of Islam here, and you have still, as much as you can see, as much as you can find, a lot of Garveyites. But I'm going to say this, sir, that when it comes to Marcus Garvey, I think people underestimate him and his machine. And the scholars who helped him with his press, such as Dush Muhammad and various people who helped him get the paper, I think Dr. Rogers recently told us T. Fortune.
T. Thomas Fortune. Yeah. Uh-huh. T. Thomas Fortune.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And folks like that who we don't know about, who Garvey had under him, who was helping him with his machine, that we should study more and more to see how he put that machine together. I'm going to say this to you, sir. You mentioned the Marcus Garvey School shoelace. We once had a school that was functioning pretty well. I don't think it's no longer in operation. So I want you to know the framework, some of the stuff that you've been doing around the country, Philadelphia had it intact at one time. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to ask you something, sir, about Elijah Muhammad and the Marcus Garvey movement. Do you have any knowledge? I've been searching for years. Was Elijah Muhammad ever a soldier in Marcus Garvey's movement? And I'm pretty sure he may have borrowed from him if he wasn't a part of it. And he probably borrowed some things from Noble Crowley. But I'm asking that question, sir, because I heard many rumors about it, but I don't know if it's true. Can you tell me?
Brother Tyler, you want to take that?
I've read he was. He was a Garveyite. Absolutely. Elijah Muhammad. Not only him, but Malcolm X's parents were also Garveyites.
Yeah, I know his father was. I know Malcolm's father was Garveyite.
Yeah, so I don't know the literature offhand that talks about or documents Elijah Muhammad's role in the UNIA, but I definitely read it quite a few places, and that's why the Nation of Islam was, you know, some of the principles of the Nation of Islam is very similar, especially the self-help, do for self principle of Marcus Garvey, because Elijah Muhammad was a Garveyite.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sir. The other thing is that I've been reading more and more when it comes to the Negro world, and some stuff that I've been reading when it comes to a guy by the name of Colin Grant. I don't know if you're familiar with that book. He wrote a book called The Negro with a Hat. That's how Du Bois referred to Garvey as, like he was a feeble-minded person, which he was not. And it's called The Rise and Fall of Marcus Garvey.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good book. And he talks about his enemies, his beginnings, his philosophy, his principle, and his focus. So I'm in and out of the book. That and Race First. And I'm enjoying reading the philosophies and principles I've read many years ago. The other thing I want to ask you, sir, is how and after he was deported, how does he wind up in England, and why not did he not go back to Jamaica? Can you tell me?
I believe he went back to Jamaica but wanted to continue to organize for Pan-Africanism. And, you know, England has a large
sector of African people. You think of Claudia Jones, the name one. So he went over to England and tried to build, you know, Pan-Africanism and the UNIA from that perspective. Because there was a large group of Africans in England who were part of the UNIA. You know, the UNIA was a worldwide organization. Mm-hmm. There were 4 million plus worldwide. So, you know, even though he lost that connection in the U.S., he still had, you know, Europe, for that matter.
Okay. I'm learning every day, sir.
Yeah.
New information.
Well, thank you, brother.
Okay, and Timothy, I know that he...
I thank you for calling. Gotta move over to Brother Griffin. Brother Griffin, I don't know, you don't have your mic on, but is there anything you want to add to the conversation? Brother Griffin? Oh, he probably stepped away. Okay, let me ask you this, Brother Tal. Can you talk a little bit about the black church that Garvey started? And from the perspective of why did he start that? You know, considering what people say about the dangers of Christianity and so forth and so on, what do you think was his motivation behind starting that? That church.
Well, I think just like with a lot of things Garvey started, it was about, you know, raising the consciousness of the people and being proud of your African heritage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the church was called the African Orthodox Church.
Yeah,
the
African Orthodox, right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. So just creating those images of African deity is a mind change.
Exactly.
I'm thinking of John Henry Clark and what he said about religion in that same documentary that you used in the opening.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and Garvey and you know, if we go be Christians, Garvey was simply saying we need to have African figures in the church. And
right.
That's what we should be looking at.
He sure did. He had a black Jesus. The disciples were black.
Yeah.
He was getting somebody.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Wants us to worship our own, worship our own images. You're right.
Right, exactly. And some of my research, the brother that used to do the cartoons for... the Pittsburgh Courier and the Amsterdam News, as well as Langston Hughes' poem Simple. It was a cartoonist, a famous cartoonist. He was trying to get him to do some Sunday school books where a lot of the prophets were going to be African in nature. Now, and where I got this from is looking at one of the letters of Langston Hughes, you know, and so that's why I say you have to sometimes, when doing research for this stuff, you have to look at those letters.
Oh, yeah.
And Langston Hughes
you saw the Pan-Africanism in Langston Hughes' works.
That's right.
Definitely saw a connection between him and Garvey.
Yeah, and see, so that's why I was going to say to Brother Timothy, one of the things you have to do is look at this, you have to look at it, you know, in a broad scale sometimes. You have to look at things that were going on, like, for instance, 125th Street was like 42nd Street in New York or Wall Street for Europeans. You know, it was the gathering center for everybody.
Yeah.
And so, like, the Hotel Theresa was the main meeting hall of all of those committees and groups. That's where Ho Chi Minh used to go to up there at the Hotel Theresa in Harlem and listen to God speak. So there's a connection of all of this. They all were together. I mean, they had ideological differences like all of us do. But they weren't, you know, a lot of that trying to create that they were enemies and they hated each other and all of that. A lot of that's Europeanism stuff. You know, that's Europeanism.
Yeah,
you know, right.
False narrative.
Yep, you're right. But I'm glad you mentioned that about the that church. You're right, exactly. My research has told me that that was designed to, obviously, Garvey knew that you would never, ever be able to start a movement without putting some kind of a spiritual system in there, because African people are spiritual people. And we've got to be able to express ourselves spiritually. So when, like today, a lot of folks are, you know, they knock the church. I understand about the philosophy of Christianity and the white Jesus and all of that, mm-hmm. But we can fix that up. We can deal with that. But you gotta have a system. You gotta have a system of spirituality. You either embrace Ifa or Yoruba, you know, you could do that. But you know, that has to, you have to, you know, move toward that. You have to get people, the community, there are Ifa communities throughout America. But we have to have a spiritual system. That's the bottom line. Listen, what about the Unaya? Now, I've been told I have a dear supporter here on the Black Reality Think Tank that was telling me about an organization out of North Carolina, Greensboro, where they have a big chapter of Unaya. And what about some of the contemporary Unaya chapters now? Are you all working with them? Are there any in Milwaukee? Tell us a little bit about.
Well, you know, that's interesting, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, a sister and her husband who used to be in our party in Milwaukee are part of that group in Greensboro.
Oh.
Sister's name is Dosali, and she was up in Milwaukee and part of our organization.
Okay.
And I know her and her husband and family moved to North Carolina not a few, maybe 10, 12 years or so back.
Okay. What's his name again?
And they say it again.
What is the brother's name?
Oh, I don't know her husband's name, because I know she was pretty much in the organization.
Well, what was her name? What was her name?
Her name is Basali.
Basali?
Yeah.
Okay.
And right. I think that's them in Greensboro.
Okay. Okay. Well,
because last time we connected, they were sending literature up with UNIA on.
Yeah, well, the sister, she told me, she always is a frequent listener to the Black Reality Think Tank. She hasn't been on today yet, but I will make sure I ask her about her, and see, because she said that there was a very large UNIA chapter. And from your knowledge, what are they doing? What are their goals and objectives? What is their focus?
From my knowledge, I mean, I think they had a school going on.
Okay.
Programs to educate.
Programs, education, okay.
People about their history and culture.
Okay, all right. Okay, that's good. And I would imagine that it would be. Now, I know for a while there, Garvey's, was it his son that was doing something? I know, is he still with us? Is he still...
which one, Julius or Marcus Jr.?
Marcus Jr.
Okay. You know what? When we were planning our Garvey Fest this year that's coming up this weekend, one of the members mentioned that it would be a great idea next year on our 30th annual Garvey Fest in Milwaukee to try to get his son to come.
Okay.
So when that idea was planted, it's something we're definitely going to look at next year. So
yeah, exactly.
I mean, it would be great if we could get Marcus Jr. to come and say a few words about his parents.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I've heard him speak. I heard him in New York once speak, and you know, he definitely was attempting to carry on that tradition in a lot of ways. That's great. Now let me ask about your celebration over this weekend. What are you going to do? What's getting ready to happen? Tell our listeners a little bit about that activity.
Yes. So the Garvey Fest this year, 29th, we can't call it annual because we stopped last year, or, you know, with the untimely transition of Dr. Ahmed Mbalia, we just postponed last year.
Okay.
So instead of saying the 29th annual, this is the 29th Garvey Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a three-day event this week in Milwaukee. So Friday, August 17th, we're having a little social at Brownstone Lounge.
Okay.
On 524 North Water Street. And, you know, we're going to just pose a few questions to the masses there. It's a African attire event.
Okay.
So that's just going to be a nice look to see people in a social lounge dressed in African attire.
Oh, wonderful.
And we're going to pose the question dealing with these internal weaknesses and some of these problems that we're facing in our community.
Okay.
And Saturday, August 18th, is the major event. That's 1 through 5. At the Park Lawn YMCA. So we right there inside the Park Lawn Projects, keeping it in the community. And in that event, we're going to have special guest performers, poets, rappers. For those who are familiar with King Kamanzi, Gat Turner will be there.
My boy Gat,
we're going to have people speaking because the theme, we asked people who were close to Baba to speak on the contributions of Ahmed Mbalia, Dr. Ahmed Mbalia.
Okay.
So
all right.
Veterans that you know, Mr. Rogers, the Courtney's will be speaking. The Lele Cog, Miss Linda Jackson, Brian Pfeiffer, Biko Baker, Victor Barnett, Running Rebel. So we got people coming out to speak.
Oh, yeah, that's
the
powerful.
Entertainment would be Kamazi. We got Lynetta Davis doing poetry.
Man.
Muhir Dyer will be there, Kwabena.
Oh, that's big. Oh, I wish I was going to be there.
And finally, Sunday, August 19th, at the Hank Aaron Trail, we're doing a walk, run, and walk, or ride.
Okay.
You can ride your bike, run, or walk. From 9 to 11 down at the Hank Aaron Trail on 6th and Canal.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Fantastic. That's excellent. I think that that just keep that tradition, that vision alive, which is what, you know, what we need to have. And I recall over the years that I was in Milwaukee, you did that. And a lot of them I remember from the Wisconsin Black Historical Museum. I had the opportunity to participate in some of the discussions and lectures, I really remember a lot of that. You know, I miss that. I wish I could be there this weekend. You know, I've got the sister from Greensboro. She is now on the line. I think this is her. So maybe she can. We can find out about the connection you had in terms of the UNIA group. Sister Ayan, is that
Dosali or
this is Sister Ayan?
Ayan, how you doing?
Okay, sorry.
Peace. How's everybody?
Wonderful. How you doing?
Hey, Doc. How are you?
I'm great. How you doing? Thank you for calling.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just got in a little much later than I expected.
Okay.
So I've been on for about 15 minutes now on the internet, and I just called in.
Did you hear?
I heard the police name mentioned.
Say it again.
I heard Dosali. Her
yes.
name mentioned. She and her husband had been doing, had a chapter of UNIA in Durham, North Carolina.
Oh, Durham.
Right.
I knew it was North Carolina. It's been so long since I had contact with them.
Okay, so, yeah.
My apologies on that.
Yeah, I've known them for many years, but I've never connected with them in terms of working with the organization. We were doing some other things. But Dr. Rogers, the person that I was talking about that is, I think, vice president of the Philadelphia chapter, is brother in out of Baltimore.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're doing, from what I understand, they're doing some big things in terms of, restructuring the organization, you know, making it more, directing it in the area of actual building, you know.
Okay.
I heard someone in New York, and I came in late, so I don't know what was discussed already, but someone in New York, from the chapter in New York, recently opened up a warehouse. So they're doing some things in, you know, economic development and whatnot.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's what I know of.
Now, you said the one that was in Philadelphia, is that what you said?
Right. The brother, I think he's head of vice president of the Philadelphia chapter. I'm not quite sure. Okay. I did contact him. I haven't heard back from him yet.
All right.
But, yeah, I know they're doing some things in the north. They're doing some big things in the north. Here in the south, they're not doing much.
All right. Okay. Because I know we've got a brother on there, Brother Timothy from Philadelphia.
And I'm looking at starting a chapter in the south because it is desperately needed.
Yeah, I agree.
So right now it's just an idea.
Brother Timothy, is that the Philadelphia chapter? Are you familiar with that? Is that active as far as you know?
I don't know, sir, but I will try to find out.
Okay.
You know, you and I will talk back and forth to make sure that I can get it for the sister because you and I talk constantly.
So who did the Garvey Parade? Was that the Uniah chapter that did the Garvey Parade in Philadelphia?
That's a very good question again. I know that Elliot had the woman on who puts it on every year. It was like her 12th annual. Okay. And I happened to listen to it that day, and I said I was going to participate.
Okay.
And I happened to do it, and I was satisfied.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you another thing I want to bring up, that I guess about a year ago, Marcus Garvey's son called into a program on Black Radio,
mm-hmm.
and he was talking about his father being pardoned. And he was looking for Barack Obama. It was further than a year ago, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But he was looking for his father to be pardoned, which I thought he should have been pardoned.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his son is a physician. Is that correct?
Okay.
The other one, Julius.
Okay. But I think that should be a goal because if Jack Johnson was pardoned, Marcus Garvey should definitely be pardoned.
Okay. I agree. Okay. So, Sister Ayan, did there any more thoughts on Garvey that you might want to mention?
Well, you know, I'm very, very much action oriented,
right?
And so, I'm considering starting a chapter here. And as you know, my focus is menticide, and you know what's been done to our minds. I just came from a meeting with some Black women, and one sister was talking about listening to a show on, I can't remember the name of the show, on radio. Everybody knows what I'm talking about, public radio or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they were talking about how much money was made off of slavery. And mm-hmm. the Black women that I was with, they're not, you know, necessarily conscious, but, you know, they know what's going on. And the sister was talking about how shocked she was at finding out how much money was actually made from slavery and how Black people did build this country for free. You know, a lot of us are just not aware. We're uninformed. And as I listen to them talk, you know, I'm just reminded of how we have to get our minds back. And how can we do that through organizations like the Garvey Movement and our Pan-African organizations? Because that's a critical piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that has to be done. It's not even an option. As I talk to people, that has to be done. So I'm thinking that as I learn more about, you know, the Garvey organizations and you and I and what that entails in terms of starting it up, I would like to put that as a focal point in terms of what we actually do in the community. Because I'm not knocking anybody, but I'm kind of not so much interested in parades and events and festivals. I want to see us build something because we are in trouble.
I totally agree with you.
Okay. Yeah.
Absolutely.
We have to get our people's minds really, really awakened so that we can start to organize and build some stuff. And let me add this real quick. A sister visited me, and I'll talk to you more about this, Dr. Rogers, a little later, visited me from California,
mm-hmm.
and she came here for the purpose of buying land. She said she'd been doing work with women and young girls and getting them conscious and proud and self-loving, developed self-esteem, all of those things. But wherever she went, when she got too Black, you know, people would find a reason to tell her that she couldn't rent out the space anymore. And she realized that the only way she was going to be able to effectively do her work was to have her own land,
mm-hmm.
and for us to have our own land, so nobody can put us out of our off of our own land. So I invited her to look in Greensboro, and I will support that because I want to do some of those real concrete solutions.
All right.
Excellent. Yes, I want to share that. That's on the table
that's
now.
That's powerful. That's powerful. Brother, with
land, we can do whatever we want to do.
Brother Tyler, with security. What are your thoughts in terms of that land piece? Because I remember Garvey saying that black people can never be uplifted until the economic agenda is solid and tight, you know, something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing, but something to that effect, that you have to build the economic program in order to do it. And I think that's what he was trying to do. You know, he is even talking about the ship and all of that. What are your thoughts on that in terms of some of the agenda now for, like, your group and those groups that are active in the spirit of Garvey and Nkrumah and so forth?
Well, land is primary. I mean, we follow a simple equation that land equals wealth, wealth equals power, power equals respect, and respect equals liberation. So without land, you can't do anything. And that's why Garvey, Malcolm, and Nkrumah, Traoré, I mean, we can go on and on about this. This is why all of them came to the conclusion that Pan-Africanism is the solution.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, because Africa is the richest continent on earth.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we got a piece in our calendar that talks about if Africa was one country. You know, it would be the third most populous country. It would have the fourth strongest economy. It would be it would produce 55% of the platinum, 20-some% of the gold. So if Africa was one and united, we would be a force. So you have to look at land.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, my concern is, you know, like when I study history and look back at what Mark and them were saying about the South and those five states in the South, I'm just concerned about utilizing land in the U.S. because it technically is Native American land, you know. That and the enemy is so well organized that I don't know if I want to be part of five states where, they, you know, we saw it in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Rosewood.
Right.
Just bomb you off the planet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you isolate it within this capitalist structure.
Right.
But definitely Lincoln with Africa and just when I was in Ghana a few months ago and all of the land that's, you know, is up for sale.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
They're welcoming us back.
Right.
To invest and be part of that. And so you driving down the street, you see a lot of unfinished houses and things of that nature, but you know, it's still inspiring to say the least.
Okay. Let me ask you this, Brother Tyler, and just because you have obviously embraced the Garveyism and the Nkrumahism idea and concept, and you know it's a part of your day-to-day work and your activity and your philosophy. Put for me in terms of the economics, Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam in perspective to that. Because very clearly, economically, they carried the Garvey dream to the next level. So how do you see that? I mean, now they don't call themselves Garveyites, and they don't say that. You know, like you said, you read a lot of their literature and material. A lot of it's embedded in there. But put that in context on how you see it. What the Nation of Islam did in terms of its economic agenda.
I think it was corporate economics. And, you know, if we go look at an economic platform in this country, it would be a cooperative economics. So again, I am, and we are at the PRSP, against capitalism whatsoever. African people cannot take parts of capitalism. I mean, because,
right,
like Martin said, it's a vulturistic system.
Right.
And black capitalism is no different from European capitalism. It's us eating our own.
Right.
So using this capitalist system for anything, to me, it won't work.
Okay.
It's dying and decaying system, and that's why you see so many of the world problems taking place.
Mm-hmm.
But the form of economics we can use is cooperative economics, and that was exempted by the Garveys, the UNIA, as well as Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam.
Okay.
And used pretty well.
And we don't give them the credit. Yeah, we don't give them the credit for using that model of cooperative economics as we should, you know, in terms of even an example of how others could follow that lead. So I've often wondered why not. And I know it may have some things to do with Islam and the approach of Islam, but still, as an African organization, you know, they did capture a lot of the cooperative economics. Now, okay, let me ask this then. Let me play the devil's advocate a minute. Right now, in the motherland, all of those countries, South Africa, Ghana, Nigeria, Sierra Leone, parts of it that are developed and developing, are all capitalists.
Absolutely.
So how do we look at that as a Pan-African idea?
Yeah, it's neo-colonialism at its finest. It's the European, it's France and England and them being replaced by African people. These are African people who are enriching themselves in corruption, brutality, et cetera, committing genocide against their own people.
Right.
For their own wealth. And you are exactly right. Every country in Africa is under a capitalist or a neo-colonial regime,
right,
where, you know, those colonial countries are still prospering off the wealth.
Right.
I mean, just going back to my trip in Africa and Ghana, we went and saw the cocoa plant where the cocoa bean was produced.
Right.
And right, it's in the one we saw is right in the smack of poverty. The kids were enjoying themselves outside, but playing in dirt and things of that nature. And you turn around, you see these cocoa trees that's producing this bean that's making shea butter, making cocoa butter.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it for chocolate, obviously. So these are billion-dollar industries in the backyard of these people.
Right.
And who's making that money? You know, where's the president of Ghana and the Senate in Ghana? How is that money being disseminated to the people who live in the community where these cocoa bean trees are from?
Right.
So you nailed that one with the leaders in Africa. They're all puppets right now.
Right.
And that's one of those internal struggles that we have to deal with.
Exactly.
Not just in the U.S., but we definitely have to deal with that. We got to get rid of those people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think one of the things that I've been looking at is just the economic power that is in Africa. You know, I'm looking at countries that we don't hear a lot about, but for instance, Mozambique on the Indian Ocean. Mozambique is loaded. I'm talking big time loaded.
Yep.
Oh, man, they got so much stuff up in there. They got bauxite. They got cobalt. And all of that's needed for this electronic stuff, you know. Apple just made $1 trillion.
What?
Yeah, Apple just made $1 trillion. And they made $1 trillion because they had access to cobalt, because cobalt is used in those cell phones and all that stuff. So I'm looking at how does the movement the Pan-African movement, the liberation movement that we're talking about doing, the starting of, you know, the push. How does that get into that? How does it approach that as a group? Because if you went to an African leader now and talked to him about doing anything, he's going to look at you economically. You know, idealistically, that may be all right, but it may sound good. But I want to know what can you do for us in this terms of this country economically, and that's what Europe's doing. That's what China is doing. China is in there. China's in Mozambique. I heard they're in there.
They're all across.
They were
all
everywhere.
In China too.
Mm-hmm. So
China is all throughout the continent.
Sister Benicia, you any thoughts about that? You ever thought about how we going to deal with that? In terms of a Pan-African movement and idea, looking at those African nations now, and that they are all wrapped in capitalism, all heavy, big time.
Yeah, it really makes me angry. It pisses me off, you know, to see that the spindly hands of you know, European invasion and capitalism just all over the world, especially all throughout Africa. But I've been listening to this sister named Dr. Mumbi.
I heard that. I listened to her. Thank you for that tape you sent me.
I
enjoyed
it. Dr. Mumbi, you know, is talking about how Africans on the continent are starting to become aware, because just like us, they've been, you know, misinformed, miseducated, and not informed, uninformed, et cetera, for centuries, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, because of social media and the internet, they're beginning to learn about their own history, which they never learned. And they're beginning to understand, they're beginning to understand that the people that control their country should not be doing that, mm-hmm. you know, and how they were enslaved, et cetera, et cetera. And how the youth are beginning to rise up and rebel. So there is a movement in Africa of young people. Even I had some people from Nigeria staying with me over the summer, and a young lady, you know, in her early 30s knew nothing of her history. You know, I have friends from Ghana, Nigeria, that are doctors, medical doctors, know nothing of their history, only what the European taught. So now that they're beginning to learn, they're shocked and getting some, now that they're getting pictures of what it was like to have slavery in Nigeria that they never knew about. So they're getting angry. Yeah. And I'm just thinking of how we could spread the Garvey message and movement throughout the Pan-African community and other just black folk in general to restart it. Because for me, this was the best thing we had. You know, only thing that's required is to be black, race first. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how simple can you get? You know, how simple can you get? So that's what I'm thinking. How can we actually, not even how, who is going to stand up and begin to spread this message so we can start to do something?
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly.
The 2 points Sister May that I just wanted to highlight on, which she was right on point with that history. My tour guide in Africa, when we went to the Elmina slave castle, after we got out of it, the first thing he said on the bus was that he would venture to say 85% of African people do not know about their history in slavery. Mm-mm. Said it's just not taught in school. Mm-mm. And I mean, so when you said that about the Nigerian sister, it rung the bell. It is factual in regards to that. It's just not taught. And your point about the young folk, another positive again was there was a young pioneer, you know, Nkrumah had this youth group called the Young Pioneers, and they're still around in Africa, and it was a lot of youth that are on fire in Africa and ready to go. So, you know, these ideas will never die. This is just a slow motion. We are what they say, war horses instead of stallions right now. But it's good to see that the youth are coming around and that, you know, using the social media platform.
Right.
And I also want to say this: we have some power that we're not using, mm-hmm. and that is relationship between the African on the continent and Africans born in America. European did a very thorough job of turning us against each other. And if we would understand and get to work at reuniting, that would be a power move in itself. Every African that I meet, and I know several because I make the very, very deliberate efforts to meet and talk to Africans, most are getting conscious. Most want to connect with us, mm-hmm. you know. So, but the narrative is that, oh, we hate each other so badly. Well, we would talk to, but we could fix that real fast. Just sit down and have some conversation.
That's exactly right.
I showed a brother, an elder from Nigeria. Yeah, he was 70 something years old. I showed him Without Sanctuary, you know, the book of 100 pictorial. The pictorial history of lynching.
Right.
You know, and he saw those hundreds of pictures of, you know, black men being lynched and burned. He was in shock. You know, they don't know what happened to us here either.
Right. That's
So we all went through the same terrorism, and that, you know, besides being African and having the same ancestors, that could unite us easily. But again, it's just making the moves, taking the steps.
Right, exactly.
Yep, well, totally agree.
Great possibilities there.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brother Terrence, Brother Tyler, I really appreciate you and for coming on today. We only got about 5 minutes left. Give us one more time your website of the organization and the dates again for the festival this weekend.
Well, the organization's website again is www.prsponline.org. And we are celebrating our 29th Garvey Fest in Milwaukee. Friday, we'll be at the Brownstone Social Lounge for social gathering and dialogue. Saturday is the bigger event, 1 through 5, at Park Lawn YMCA outside. A beautiful day lined up, 80 degrees sun, so bring your family out. Sunday, we're going to do a walk, run, and ride at 9 a.m. at the Hank Aaron Trail.
All right. Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, listen, I want you to make sure you give my beloved sister, Dr. Dorita Imbalia, a lot of love for us and the work that she and her husband did over the years and pulling this together and letting you all work on. I just want to remind our audience that we'll be here next Tuesday at we'll be here at 8 o'clock from 8 to 10, and also I want to say that our sponsor, we want to thank our sponsor again, which is African Perspective, Motherland Media Network, for their sponsorship. That's Brother Oshi. He comes on every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. On African Perspectives, and you can access his program by simply going to www.timeforanawakening.com, and he will be streaming live on there every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 to 1 p.m. And then on Friday evenings from 8 to 10 is Time for an Awakening. That is a program that is hosted by Brother Elliot from Philadelphia. Wonderful program, a lot of dynamic guests that he brings on. That's on every Friday from 8 to 10 p.m. on timeforanawakening.com. And then he is on again on Sundays from 7 to 10, same time, and it's a dynamic show. And again, as I said, the Black Reality Think Tank does come on Saturdays from 4 to 6. We have a wonderful show of a young producer who was a part of the Millennium, post-Millennium people, young people, and they're working on trying to look at things that the Millenniums can do to bring our community back together. And so they'll be on this Saturday from 4 to 6 talking about ways that they can bring their community back together. And all you have to do is go to the Time for the Black Reality Think Tank website on Facebook and get that link for doing that. And you will be able to hear a dynamic conversation with Ms. Shani B. and her group as they talk about pulling the community together. And so that's basically, we thank all of you, our listening audience, for your call in. And we do thank Brother Tyler. Keep doing the work, my brother. Keep hanging
in. Man, I appreciate you inviting us on here.
Right.
And much love, respect to the people who called in and were part of the show. I love the building, the Mason building we're doing right here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I'm going to have you back now. I want you to know that. So don't think this is the last time. I'm going to bring you back on, okay?
Oh, man, appreciate it.
Okay, now.
Have you done anything with hip-hop?
No, not yet, but let's talk about it.
We can talk about that, too.
Okay, we will definitely do that. Okay, all right. Peace and love, brothers and sisters. I'll see you next Tuesday evening here on Time for an Awakening. Black is you, black is me, black is us, black is we, black is
is you.